Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the PERMA podcast. I am James Prescott, your host. Welcome back to the show. Really great to have you all back here again. And I'm delighted to welcome two guests to the show today, two new guests as well. Haven't been on the show before. I connected through friends before Christmas, and we've had a lot of chats since then. And I'm really excited to introduce you to Ian Chi and John Bragel. Welcome.
Hello. What a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me and John.
Yes, thank you, James.
You're welcome. So it's good to have you. You're both filmmakers, writers, creators, you recently created a movie, a sort of 10-minute short film about grief. Called I Do, which I was lucky enough to see. It's an incredible movie. I think it's entirely in black and white. It's a 10-minute movie and a documentary. I don't know if I call it a movie or a documentary. It's not really a documentary, but it's a true story. It's a man telling the story about his wife and the death of his wife and the grief of losing his wife, which is really, really powerful. I hope everyone gets to see it because it's the kind of movie that we need to see and the kind of topic we need to be talking about. Obviously, we talk about grief a lot on this show. It's a big theme of the show. And so we're going to be talking about that a lot today. So, guys, tell me a bit about the story of this little movie and how it got made and the story behind it.
I'll dive in. This is John. I was the director of the film. And the film came about almost about a year ago in 2023. And the film subject is a family friend named Jim Kuhlman. He's someone I've known for about 10 years now. He's a family friend. He goes to my parents' church. And I became familiar with his story through my dad, who was actually serving by his side around the time that his wife passed away, his wife Julie. And I got friendly with Jim because he is an artist and he taught creativity for a while. And he taught art school in high school, or he taught art in high school for his entire career. And he just retired. And we just hit it off on like a friend's basis and a common interest basis. And upon meeting him the first time, I just felt that he had a way of telling stories and sharing information, just a really like emotional, heartfelt way to communicate that wasn't really common in men of his generation that I had encountered. So shortly after meeting him, just this like seed of an idea slowly started to grow within me. And I think early on it was a bit too soon to tell this story about his wife passing. And now, you know, it's been now almost 11 years, but when we made the film, 10 years since his wife's passing, and it just felt like enough time had passed to kind of delve into that. And Jim felt the same way, that he had gained enough sort of perspective from the experience. And it was, you know, it was a form of him honoring his wife. So,
wow.
That's, I might have veered off your question, but.
No, yeah. That's amazing. I mean, I love that. I love that it's somebody you know, because I think it kind of imbues the movie with a deeper intimacy, I think. So when I was watching it, I felt a sense of intimacy. This wasn't just like a filmmaker, like just finding a random person. But there was a lot of intention about the movie. I think that's the energy that it communicates. It's shot very well, like in a very clever way, because I think you have him in different rooms around his house, and talking about different memories and the bed, the story he tells about his bed and the marital bed in which he died and things. It's like there's just this intimacy about it, this care, I think, for the subject matter that comes across really well.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, Ian, what was your kind of role in making this movie?
Well, my role came after the filming was done, and John showed me what I believe was pretty close to a final cut. And yeah, I came aboard as a EP to kind of help get it out to the world and find the right folks to share it with. But what struck me, I think, was I had never really seen something about grief, but with the kind of lightness and joy that was in this piece as well. And I thought that was really valuable to experience, to share with other people too. And I don't even think I really knew that when I first watched it. Like, when I first watched it, I thought this was a really beautiful piece. Visually, there's like a, but also like the pace of it, like it's not really trying to do anything as much as it is just kind of being with a person in a space and time. And yeah, it's been cool because, like, you know, even us talking on this podcast now, you know, it's kind of through the process of finishing the film and getting it out into the world, we've connected with some amazing like soul people.
Mm.
And it's been very fulfilling in that way. It's almost been like this, trying to find the right words to communicate it. It's like, I don't know, it's kind of felt like there's a wave of life that it gave birth to even after being finished. Like, a lot of times in my past work, I've made something and put it out into the void, and, you know, there'll be some comments here and there, but there doesn't seem to be ongoing, you know, birthing of relationships in life. But this has been pretty cool to see, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm just, maybe I'm tying together disparate threads, but it's like a film about grief has birthed more life, which is pretty dope.
Yeah, like, yeah, I was thinking the same thing. There's a certain irony in that, isn't there? And like, it's and I've been, I, you know, I'm desperate to see more movies like this in the world, because this is a subject that I think we need to reflect on a lot more, and a lot, and that it's part of our, for me, it's part of any kind of healthy awakening journey, any kind of healthy healing growth journey has some kind of grieving process involved in it. Like, because the energy of grief is basically, it's essentially love. It's grief is a form of love. You know, and there's this kind of, what I've learned over the years is there's this kind of duality of joy and grief together, like that, and the connector between them is love, and they're both expressions of love, and I think one deepens the other. Like, when you have joyful moments, then you remember them more deeply when you're grieving, and when you grieve, the joyful moments become more meaningful. Like, I think that's my experience anyway. Yeah. Well, I mean, what did you learn about grief and grieving when making the movie? Like, John?
Just how universal it is, really. I think, I mean, obviously, I guess, it's just something I never really thought about. And it occurred to me, I mean, I wanted to make this film for a lot of reasons, one of which being, like, I was going through my own grieving process with infertility, and I didn't really realize that was like a form of grief. I had no idea. I just knew, like, the first, you know, I mean, it'd been like several years of trying, but it was, we had started these different treatments and stuff, and it was just all the news and the things that we were hearing. It was so painful and so exhausting, and it was all this mix of feelings that I was so unfamiliar with at the same time. And I was simultaneously trying to kickstart my film career back up at the same time. And it was just so challenging. And it wasn't until I started really, it was, part of it was talking with Jim, the film subject, and before we started making the film. And the other part of it was just like reading online, trying to understand what it was that I was experiencing, that I realized, oh, this is grief that I'm experiencing. It's wrestling with the idea of losing a dream that I've had since I was a kid. And that was pretty profound awareness to me that grief can deal with any type of loss. And I always kind of just thought like grief was just tied to death, you know, like a physical death. Mm. And I would always compare my feelings of loss in a more abstract way to other people's losses. Mm. And I think through this process with Jim and just reading and learning is just this idea of not comparing or belittling or, you know, making my grief experience smaller in comparison to somebody else's and just allowing myself to really just sit and honor my own pain and learn from it. And so that was huge. And I would say probably some of the most wisdom I've ever heard in my life has been through listening to podcasts about grief. Mm-hmm. And that was profound. And so I just kind of have been on this journey last year, predominantly on a journey of like really trying to understand its role in my life and our lives. And just, again, like, I mean, I'm working on another project this year on grief too, that it's like, I can't let it get away with me. It's like, there's such a depth in it that I'm just like, I think wisdom is like the word I keep coming back to. Like there's such wisdom in it that, I'm just gravitating towards it. So that sort of answers your question.
Yeah, it's a great answer.
There's like a lifetime worth of lessons I feel like I learned through making the film that I'll probably, you know, continue learning.
That's amazing.
Yeah. There was, well, this new project, John just sent along some notes. And among those notes, I think, was a quote by someone I forget, but talking about like literally every single culture in the history of humanity has dealt with grief. So it's like maybe nothing more universal. And I also remember being struck by James when we were talking before, you were talking about how like you were framing entire cultures not having had the ability to grieve. And it was the first time that I perceived if there were, you know, some sniper way to like help masses of people in entire countries or just globally process or feel their grief, it would perhaps create such a huge domino effect for everything else.
Yeah.
In a good way.
Mm.
'Cause, you know, in my own journey too, like I just keep coming to this truth that so much of my life has been running away from feelings and pain. And I guess different forms of grief, so to speak.
Mm.
So it's like if we just figured out how to actually feel that pain and the grief, like it would open the door for so much more joy and wonder and things.
Yeah.
But we're not taught that.
I know. Like it's the system that we live in is kind of, you know, we're robots. And feelings and emotions and stuff are mild annoyances or things to be commodified or, you know, monetized or something. And there's no, like, I told this story on my website when I wrote a piece about this recently, that when my mother died in 2000, it was the company that I worked for at the time tried to make me take annual leave instead of compassionate leave. So the time I had off to do the funeral and sort everything out and process it, well, they were like, "This is, you've got to take this as annual leave. You don't get compassionate leave." And I was like, "What? Like, my mum just died. Like, you know." Fortunately, my dad was the head of a company that employed the company that I worked for, so he kind of made some calls, I think, and they kind of backtracked on it, but. Yeah, I mean that just taught me a lot about how the world sees like grieving and stuff. How a lot of, you know, capitalism and business and like how a lot of all of that, do they just, it's not, it's kind of an annoyance. It's not a priority, you know, it's kind of dehumanizing. And yeah, and I think that kind of began me down that road of like just understanding like that we, you know, that we don't have rituals of grief in the West. We don't have healthy rituals of grief. They're kind of gone. We used to have this, and we used to, before the Second World, before the First World War, we used to have a lot more rituals around grief than we did. And then like so many people died in the First World War that they couldn't, they didn't have time to properly grieve all of them. So those kind of rituals just stopped. And like, and that is not a healthy thing. Like in other parts of the world, they still have really good grieving rituals. Like whole towns like stop for a few days to grieve somebody, or you know, they or they have kind of like celebrations, or they have like wailing, or like you know, there's loads of different grief rituals that are used by different people because they recognize that grieving is a this sacred thing, and that it's really really important, and it's important for healing, and it's important to honor the people that have passed, and also to help you begin new life again. And because life is always different after somebody's died, you know, they're losing a family member in particular is like a pivot point in your life. You know, it's you know, everything changes after that happens because you can't go back to what it was before. So like, yeah, I mean, like if we had healthy grief rituals in our society, and we had had them for hundreds of years, and we kept them, and it was still a priority for us, the world would be so different right now. I'm absolutely convinced you wouldn't have as many wars, you wouldn't have as much violence, you wouldn't have as many oppressive dictatorships. Even what's happening right now in the world, a lot of it can be put down to unresolved trauma and grief on a kind of national scale, on a, you know, on a cultural scale, that like a whole nation didn't grieve properly. And now that the anger from that grief is now consuming them, and it's causing harm to other people. So it's like it's a spiral. If you don't deal with your grief, it can destroy you. It can control you. It can kill you. I mean, that's like, yeah, it's, but when you do it well, it's this sacred thing which can bring healing and life and joy.
I'm curious about that. Like, cause it does seem like a spiral, or like this kind of massive, like insatiable beast within people. Like if they don't address the grief, it becomes almost this, like, you know, you attack things outside of yourself, or, you know, find other ways to try to fill the void, right? But that downward spiral, I'm curious for you guys, like personally, or people you've had in your life, or even Jim's story, like what makes for the spiral to stop? Like what is, I don't even know what the question I'm asking is. Like how does one first face the spiral to like stop the spiral? Or like what is the most effective way to switch that? Or like in Jim's case, I'm curious, like John, did he talk further on like how he began to feel more life, I guess, or what the turning point was?
The turning point for him to, because I don't know, I think it's tough. It's like there's like always like a sadness of the loss, but there's also a love and a gratitude and appreciation for what he had to experience. And I think just that is where like I think the healing comes, is when you know, in his case, I've never experienced, this is one of the reasons why grief is so compelling to me, is like I've never lost a parent before. I lost grandparents when I was like too young to really understand it. So I'll speak about this on behalf of my understanding of Jim's story, but this is a big part of the reason why grief is so compelling to me, is because I'm kind of like, I've experienced it in different ways, but not in like huge dramatic ways. So I'm like really interested in this knowledge and wisdom right now. But I think it's a matter of like, in Jim's case, it's, you know, you get a far enough away from it. It could be glimpses within the first year or second year, third year, like you mentioned, like not being able to smile. And, but I think the further you get away from it, and it's similar to me with my infertility stuff and even grieving the loss of my old business and certain friendships and things, it's like the further that you get away from it, the more perspective you have. And then hopefully, you can gain some gratitude from that those experiences. But I think that probably takes a lot of discipline. And Jim's also a Christian. I know his faith has played a big part in that as well. But my understanding is it just takes time and like self-compassion and love. And I don't know. I'm sure, James, you have a wealth of knowledge on that question. So I'll hand it to you.
Thank you. I think like for me, I think it's step one is like acknowledging that you're grieving, like just mm-hmm. like that you've got that you are grieving something or someone. And like you say, it can be loads of things. It can be the loss of a job you like. It can be moving from a house that you loved. It can be the end of a relationship that meant a lot to you. It can be, like you say, the end of a business that, you know, that giving up a business that you'd had for a long time. Or it can be the loss of a loved one. Or it can be like not being able to have children, like when you've wanted children and finally having to accept that you may not have children. It's like they're all different forms of grief. The first step is really, like I say, acknowledging that, okay, I am grieving. This is happening and I am grieving. Right now, my dad is very old and he's not well, and we know that we're probably going to lose him in the next year or two. Like, so I've been talking with my therapist, and I'm already grieving for his loss. Like, he's still here, but I'm already going through the grieving process. And the first step of that was acknowledging he is going to die, like someday, and I have to be ready for that. I have to accept that it's going to happen and not deny it, and that I'm going to be grieving. And maybe I'm already grieving because there's a lot of things that I used to do with him a lot that I will never do with him again. A lot of things that I did with him when I was a child that mean a lot to me that I will never do with him again. And that makes me sad. And that's grieving. And so acknowledging it and then noticing it in your body when it comes up, because grief manifests in our bodies in different ways. Like, I've talked to people for this podcast whose reaction when their partner died was laughing. That was how they processed grief. That's how their body grieved. It wasn't a choice. It was just how their body reacted. And it wasn't like, oh, I'm really happy they're dead. It was more joy that, you know, I got to spend my life with them. I got to have all these precious moments with them. It was gratitude. Like, you're right about the gratitude thing. Like, I am more grateful now than I've ever been in my life. And that's because I've grieved well, I think. And like today I saw my parents' wedding video for the first time today. Never seen it before because it had been, you know, it had been all kind of messed up and we couldn't watch it, but we got it restored and I got it today and I watched it. And it was just like, I was so happy. It was like they were alive again. It was like my mum was alive again. You know, it was tangibly. Because I'd never seen it before. And again, that's another way to process grief. It's like you have those moments that you celebrate. And you can cry and you can be happy at the same time because you had those moments. And now whatever happens now, I've got those memories like digitally saved. I've got them. Like, I'll always have those no matter what happens. So that means so much, you know. And one of the reasons we did that, we got them stored, is because we know my dad's not well and we wanted him to see them before he passed away, which is going to be wonderful for him. Yeah, I mean, like acknowledging it and listening to it and giving yourself permission to grieve. Like another person I had on this show who's a grief worker and works with people who are grieving, she wrote a book called Permission to Grieve, which is, and it's a really, really good book, and it's a really good, really good wisdom. Like, you're allowed to grieve. You're allowed to not be okay. You're allowed to be a mess. You're allowed to want to scream. You know, you're allowed to want to cry. You're allowed to fall apart a bit when you're grieving. It's okay. that's a normal human response. You know, you can be a really healthy human being and you still might, it'll still happen, because that's how our, that's how we work. You know, we like, but yeah. So I think that's the important thing, is to pay attention to it and acknowledge it and not deny it, not try and bury it. Don't try and be strong. Like, I made this mistake when my mother died. I tried to be strong for everybody else and I buried my grief for a long time, and it turned into anger, like in a really unhealthy way, and I had to get help for it. But you know, so don't do that. You know, I mean, I was 23. I had no idea about grief at all. I was very young. Yeah, so don't ignore it, because it will show itself, and the more you ignore it, the more power it has over you, and the more harmful it can become as well to other people. So yeah, acknowledge it and listen to it, I think.
I don't know if this is going to make sense, but I'm going to just try streaming what I thought and feel. It's almost like when my grandfather passed away some years ago, and then also one of my friends who was quite young, I don't even think she was 30, and it was sudden. I remember, like, right after hearing the news or seeing my grandfather had passed away, it's like death is like, you can't compute it with your mind. Like, it's not something that you can make sense of with your mind anymore. And it's almost like this, like, full, it's like operating in a different dimension. It's like your mind's trying to process, but you just can't process it, because it's just not, it just does not compute. It's almost like this, like, blank, you know, kind of cursor blinking on the screen in the mind. It's like, how do I like process this? But you can't really make sense of it linearly. But, you know, I just saw this note that I wrote to myself some years ago of, like, pain is how the heart breaks the mind open. Like, it's like, pain, when you have enough pain, like, even from my own just personal burnout experience, just taking my own egoic motives all the way, and it just became so painful to the point where I just, like, had to stop. And that's when I just kind of dropped down. You know, it wasn't a matter of one or two days, probably like this whole year it's been my sabbatical, but during that year it was like gradually dropping down into my heart and just like feeling, and there's this different realm of kind of like intuition, heart, knowingness, you know, there's these other words that people use, but it's almost like, yeah, it's almost like grief is this like universal pain that like, it's like an anchor into your heart almost, you know, it's like your heart. It's like fully diving into it. It's like your heart opens up. And I remember talking to David Kessler, this grief specialist. And he, I think, founded some organization after his son passed away. I don't remember exactly what the organization was, but he was talking about how his love continued for his son after his son passed away. It's almost like his heart expanded even more in a certain sense, you know, and it allowed a lot more connection with other folks maybe who had lost their sons or what have you. So
yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me from my experience of losing my mum. I feel closer to her now than I did when she died. You know, as I did more grief work and started listening to my body and engaging with all my grief, and I started to and I was able to forgive her for all the things that were unresolved when she died, you know, that and let those go. I found a deeper intimacy with her. I even had a couple of transcendental experiences, you know, with her, like, which was incredible. One of which was like, I was actually in a small chapel service, doing taizé chanting, which is in French. And my mother was a French teacher and she spoke fluent French. And I've told the story on this show before, so people who've listened to who listen to this show will know this story, but I was getting the French words wrong, and I just suddenly felt this energy around me. I was almost, my body was there, but my consciousness was just almost floating. I could feel this energy around me, and it was my mum was there. We were laughing at me getting the French words wrong. And it was so real. And I actually realized later that my mum did transcendental meditation when, you know, when she was younger. And so when you think about time and how, you know, sometimes things transcend time, that maybe, you know, are we having an experience of, did she have this experience before I was born or something? Or like, you know, or in terms of time, you know, and that I, it just felt so real, you know. That was where my exploration of time kind of came from, and how time works, and, you know, and how bendy time is, and dimensions of reality, and, you know, and quantum entanglement and things like that all kind of came from in relation to grief, because it felt like all of those things were happening. I just had a real experience of it. So I wouldn't call that prescriptive. I wouldn't say like there's a formula that you can follow to get there. It just, I was doing all the grief work, I was doing embodiment work, I was just tuned in, and it just happened. I wasn't looking for it. It found me, you know. And, but yeah, I definitely agree that, like, if you do the grief work, it can actually really deepen your relationship with the people that you've lost in a very tangible way. And it's very healing. Yeah, so that's my thoughts on that. This is a really good conversation. I'm enjoying this. It's like, we started off on the movie and we're kind of just exploring grief, which is my favorite topic to talk about, you know. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that, like, we've all had different kinds of experiences of loss and grief, like different, you know, John with the career and with the job and with the children thing, and, you know, with your grandma and with your grandmother, like, it, we all kind of process things differently, don't we? Like, it's all had different experiences, yeah, but still all grief. You know, it still falls all under that umbrella.
I think that's kind of what I'm interested in most understanding maybe this year, is sort of how to define grief in a more general way, where it's not thought of as just death of a human, like I was mentioning before, because it's so incredibly relatable. And I know I learned so much when I learned that it was an experience that didn't have to just be tied to death of a person. Actually, man, I had a really, when you were talking, Ian, it made me think of something that I haven't even thought of as like grief, but maybe it is, maybe you guys could tell me. But I was shooting my first feature film in December of 2023. And it was a really big deal for me. Ian knows this story. And, working with a director who had a ton of experience filming in my hometown. It's a film that, you know, captures the spirit of Baltimore culture, which I love. It's a big part of my life and my identity. And I ended up getting COVID the last week of production. But there was a moment where, you know, I could feel myself having like a cold and sniffles. I knew a couple people, other people on set had had COVID or got COVID. And I remember the moment when I picked up the COVID test and I was like, there's no way I have COVID. Like, this would be crazy if I had COVID, because this, I never get sick, you know, like this just doesn't happen to me. And I pick up the test and I was like, okay, if I get COVID, this is what this means. This is what I will have to do. And it was like a really conscious moment for me, because it was a really big deal. And then I tested and I just looked at the test as it said positive for like 5 minutes. And I was just sitting there looking at it and could, like, you were, Ian, you were describing, it's like these like three dots or whatever. It's like, you don't know what to do. Now, it's not like someone died, but it's like this experience died to me that was like incredibly meaningful. My first feature film, you know, and, I just remember thinking it was like that. It was like these three dots happened, and I couldn't, as much as I was aware that this was a huge experience that I was having in that moment, looking at the COVID test, all that occurred to me within that like 5 minutes, the only tangible thought that I could get to was, how do I survive and how do I move on and how do I keep this train going of the production? Like, it wasn't like I could just sit down and just like be with my feelings. Like, that wasn't my, and I'm pretty like versed in that idea of like sitting with my feelings too, but it was like that train was moving. And so I needed to start making phone calls. And I could imagine it'd be similar to, you know, a loved one dying or a spouse dying or something much more tragic than not being able to finish your first film. Is like, it's like, okay, what do I have to do? Where do I have to be? Who do I have to call? And it's this like chain reaction to where, and then I found myself, you know, weeks later, just being like, holy shit, what the hell happened? And now just being able, starting to be like, okay, I've got to like really make sense of what that experience was and how it impacted me. And thankfully, in this case scenario, I think I have parsed it pretty well. Again, if it's a death of someone, it's a different experience. But anyway, I don't know how that translates to this whole conversation, but it was just an interesting recent experience that I had that I figured I would share and see if it has anything to do with what we're talking about here.
I don't know if this relates either, but it makes me think like, there's a lot that needs to happen when someone passes too, like, you know, so I could see,
yeah,
like when my grandfather passed away, there's so much planning around it too, like between my mom and her siblings. It's almost like that. Yeah, I'm sure there's different cultures that have figured out how to maybe like lift that burden a little bit from people, because that I could totally see that as like a, you know, not a intentional escape, but it's like we just live in a world where there's not intentional time and space, I guess is what I'm getting at, to write even when it happens to have space, you know. It's like, James, you were dealing with the company telling you, you know, that it, you couldn't have a compassionate leave.
I mean, this time is different. Like, me and my sister have talked a lot about this with my dad, because we've both been through it, so we both know what it's like, and we want to make space for ourselves to grieve and when it happens. So we've actually talked about we're gonna try and plan ahead as much as we can, like have all the contact numbers, have all the arrangements in place, know who's going to do what, where things are going to happen, have the funeral planned as much as we can with input, and just have as much done ahead of time as we can, and including knowing who's going to do what. Like, for example, I'm not going to go and clear out my dad's flat. I'm just not. I live 3.5 hours away for a start off. It's not that big, so it won't need that many people, and it will be too hard for me. And physically, my back is not able to lift things anyway. So we've already decided that, for example. Like, so we've kind of, we're trying to create a space for ourselves where the busyness of dealing with it doesn't take up too much time or space. And, you know, I've talked to my fiance about how we'll deal with it, and I've asked her to try and be strong for everyone, not let me bury my grief, not let me ignore it, not let me hide from it. So I've got some accountability in place before. And of course, and my fiance's lost a parent as well, so they know exactly what I'm talking about. So it's, you know, it's not unfamiliar for them either. So just putting these little, this is what we're doing. I'm not saying this is what everyone should do, but this, for what we're doing, it's like we're putting these things in place before, so that to minimize the stress of that you have to, of all the things you have to do, so that we can focus on grieving. And and that is, you know, and we've already decided this Christmas we're all going to be together. You know, Dad may not be there. He might, hopefully he will be, but if he's not, we'll all be together for Christmas, which will be important. And so all those little things, you know, and I guess that's something that we've learned from before, is that because when we lost mum, I mean, my dad basically did all of it when we lost mum, because I just wasn't in a headspace to do anything at that point. I was numb, pretty much. I was just I was just not able to do anything. Like, I was just trying to survive, just trying to breathe. I remember I was in shock for quite a while. I didn't cry for at least a couple of weeks or a week or two or something, because I just couldn't. I was just on autopilot, and I was being strong for everyone else, which I shouldn't have been, but that was my default mechanism at that point. And so we've learned from all of that, you know, that we just want to be prepared, you know, and other family members are prepared as well. I think we're doing pretty well in terms of helping ourselves into grieving when that comes. But like, to have that experience, like that you talked about, John, that, you know, being like one of your dreams to work on a movie of your own, and then a week before it's finished to have like, I've got to step back from this. That is a loss. It's not like you probably get to work on another movie, but it's your first one and it's nearly finished. And right at the moment when it's nearly finished, you have to step back. Like, I can relate to that to a certain extent. Like, because I still have anxiety now about when good things happen in my life. I have anxiety, and it's the moment they're about to happen, I have this little bit of anxiety that something's going to happen and it's going to get taken away from me in the last minute, which probably comes from my childhood and losing my mum and things like that, you know, because I was really close to her and we had a really good relationship, and then it was just gone. She was just gone. So I understand that impulse completely. Like, and it's good that you acknowledge that as well. It's good that, like, you recognize that for what it was. Like, that's really positive, I think. Like, I'm sure you'll get to make loads of movies, you know. And maybe it means that you'll cherish every moment you work on a movie in future more than you would have done, because you know how it can be taken away so quickly. Like, so, maybe that's the lesson you can take from it.
It's interesting to think in the context of this conversation just how much all the knowledge, maybe it's a bold statement, but all the knowledge that we have is reflective of death and grieving, in the sense that, you know, when it comes to like mindfulness and like self-growth, and maybe that's the type of knowledge I'm talking about, because it's all trying to come into an appreciation of what we have, which is reflective of our losses and what we don't have, as far as I understand it. And I think that's one of the ways that I feel like I've grown a lot this year, is through leaning into these feelings and the experience and making the film. And I also had another experience where I visited, her name's Dr. Joanne Cacciatore, and she deals with traumatic grief. And I met her in Arizona, and having conversations with people on her property who had experienced things that were so horrific. You know, one man I was talking to for a couple of hours, his wife murdered their three children, you know, and like lots of suicides and of kids and of parents that I was talking to. And when I was there, I was just struck with, just how we have to be so appreciative for what we have, like in the moment, every moment and every day. Like, it was such a light bulb moment for me. And I think that is something that I've been coming back to a lot since those days. It was like a few months ago. And, you know, because we shouldn't take anything for granted. You know, at any moment, anything could happen to any of us, you know, anything, like these tragedies that I heard these parents talking about, like, we're not exceptions to any of that stuff. You know, we've all had like friends and family members that have died in a moment. It's all unexpected. So that's what really stood out to me from that experience. And I think that a lot of that factored into the film experience too, like every day trying to be as grateful as I could to be on set. And then it was gone. It sucked. Like, it was probably one of the worst weeks of my professional life. Like, it was heartbreaking, but also at the same time, realizing how much that I actually have to be grateful for simultaneously. So that what you were talking about before, it's like that heartbreak and that loss, but also the gratitude, like those to me, they have to coexist. But ultimately on the other end of it, like, I couldn't be more grateful for my crew and my team that got through it. You know, am I super thrilled with how every image looked when they finished that film in this example? No, but I think more importantly, I'm grateful that they did get it finished and it's going to have a life of its own. So anyway, just been reflecting a lot on gratitude to that comes from these like tragic experiences. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's gratitude and joy and grief. They're just circle, you know, of love in a sense, like they're all connected to each other. My life is grieved. My life is richer because I've grieved. I don't regret grieving. I don't regret spending time grieving at all. You know, obviously it's sad that I had to grieve in the first place, because you wouldn't choose to have to go through those things. But
yeah,
at the same time, I'm glad that I actually experienced them rather than try to survive, just ignoring them, because my life is richer for choosing to feel that grief and experience it and learn from it, and rather than ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like part of my maturing and trying to go within and grow spiritually as well is life going from this linear, like A to B, B to C, to here to here, if that makes sense. It's like it's like before, life was so much about doingness and like achievement and getting to some place. But now it's much more about beingness and here and the window of the present, like now. And it's not about getting over there, but it's just like riding the wave of time as it just goes, and you're just surfing this wave kind of thing. And in that sense, it's much more when you let go of like the linear mentality.
Yeah.
It's like you drop down into like a perpetual joy that deepens with more presence, I think. Yeah, it's like a perpetual unfolding that you're like a part of and witnessing now, rather than like A plus B equals C.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's actually a word for the unraveling of things that have yet to be seen and are yet to be known. You know what that word is? Apocalypse.
No.
Oh, really? Apocalypse?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know that. Interesting. Wow.
I wrote something on Medium about when the pandemic started. I wrote something about this being our apocalypse. And I found the definition of it. And it's like an unraveling of things that are true that have not yet been seen or known.
Ooh, that's good.
And I was like,
when I was talking to one of my friends recently about just our own path, he was like, yeah, it's got to feel like falling off the cliff every day, is how he put it.
Yeah.
I thought that was great. Falling off the cliff every day.
There's actually a practice that I think I've told you, Ian, about, but there's this woman named Tara Brach, who's a Buddhist mindfulness teacher, also a therapist. And the book that I'm reading right now, it's called Radical Compassion, but there's this acronym that she's been teaching about for probably like a decade now called RAIN. It stands for Recognize, Allow, Investigate, and Nourish. And it's been so helpful to, you know, you use it the point is you use it to sit in your feelings and to essentially like shower yourself with compassion at the end of it. It's like a step process. And that's been incredibly helpful, not just for grief. I mean, for grief, absolutely. I think that's a powerful tool, but for any tool and just sitting in that pain. And like the more I'm aware, I find myself just saying like, oh, I'm angry, I'm sad, I'm frustrated, I'm edgy, whatever. It's like learning that, that and just being with that and like being okay with that and not trying to just run away from it. It's helped me a lot with just like my identity and accepting that and that those feelings are okay and they will wash away. Like they're not just, I'm not just going to stay sad or angry. That's been really like, that's one tool that just stuck with me for a long time. So just figured I'd share.
That's cool. I love that. Really healthy.
Rain. I love that. Nourish.
The rain of self-compassion.
Love that.
Watering your soul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Exactly.
Yeah. That's it.
Or sorry, the N is nurture that she uses. It's nurture.
Nurture. Yeah. Nurture
is a better word anyway, right, Ian?
Yes.
Oh, this has been so great, guys. Yeah, this has been amazing. I'm pretty sure we could probably talk for hours and hours and hours on this. I think maybe we should have another podcast or two talking about this. So where can people find your work, guys? And where can they find this movie? I do.
It's on, my website's just jonathanbregel.com, JonathanBregel.com. And the film's on there. It's also on Vimeo. If you just look up I Do. Yeah, that's it for me though.
Yeah. I mean, people can find me on, I guess, Instagram, Ian the Korean on Instagram.
Awesome.
And, I was going to say, I wish we each had a beer. We could cheers to the apocalypse.
Absolutely, yeah. The grief apocalypse, yeah.
To unseen things unfolding before us.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's, yeah, it's a really cool word when you realize what the meaning is. So, yeah. So do check these guys' work out and do check this movie out. It's like 10 minutes long. It's really good, really powerful. And you can sit with it, reflect on it, watch it back. It's brilliant. So thank you guys, and I'm definitely going to have you guys back on the show. I think we've got loads we can talk about, so we'll keep in touch for sure. Thanks for listening, everyone.